Welcome to Alternative Realities, a podcast about the people, strategies, and stories driving the world of alternative investments. I'm Aaron Mulvihill, and my guest today is Tyler Giroux, a portfolio manager within the private equity group at JP Morgan Asset Management. Tyler has been at JP Morgan for over 20 years, and as a portfolio manager, he helps evaluate companies and make investment decisions for the various strategies that the private equity group offers. On today's episode, we will be discussing private equity in sports, a niche but growing segment of the private equity landscape, especially over the last couple of decades. Our conversation is particularly timely given the ever-increasing valuations of sports franchises around the globe. We'll discuss what is fueling the rise in team valuations, what all of this money is going towards, and trends and risks he's seeing in the market. Let's jump right into it. Tyler, thank you for being here. Really great to speak to you about this.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks, Aaron.
This is a niche but growing segment that has, I think, a lot of interest out there from investors and just the general audience of what's happening within private equity and sports. But before we get into that, I'd love to hear a bit about your background, what brought you to JP Morgan Asset Management, and your interest in this space.
Great. No, thanks for that. So, yeah, Tyler Giroux, I've been a portfolio manager here for the past 20 years in the private equity group at JP Morgan Asset Management. Where I lead, private equity investments, and also help to manage the portfolio construction across our platform, which currently manages about $36 billion in assets. On a personal note that's perhaps relevant to our conversation today, I grew up in Oklahoma City. I'm a huge Oklahoma City Thunder fan, so I've got my pullover here.
All right.
NBA champion Oklahoma City Thunder, as it happens to be, this year at least.
That's in my travels across the states, Oklahoma is the only place I've not been to yet. So
gotta,
I think I've hit maybe 47 or 48 states, but I've got to make my way to Oklahoma and maybe catch a game while I'm there.
There you go.
So getting into the topic at hand here, private equity in sports, a lot of money has flowed into private equity over the last couple of years. And from my understanding in the major leagues, and we'll probably get to this later, it's a fairly new phenomenon because private equity has not been allowed to invest in those areas. Can you give us a little bit of background on just the sector, the growth of private equity funding within sports generally?
Yeah, happy to. I mean, maybe just worth starting with the fact that sports is a really large category overall. Mm-hmm. It spans a wide variety of industries, everything from media, entertainment, technology, apparel, and sports gaming. I'm particularly grateful personally for the growth in that area because it employs my son. Mm. So shout out to Luke. You need to give your dad some better tips for the games this weekend. But all kidding aside, it's a large market. The sports team investments that, as you mentioned, are a fairly recent phenomenon dominate the headlines, but it's much bigger than that. Overall, estimates, I think, are pretty conservative that sports is generally about a $500 billion category. And private equity certainly is always interested in large markets, especially when they have characteristics such as strong underlying growth trends, recurring revenues, and favorable supply and demand dynamics. So digging into a few of those points, I think on the strong growth side, it's estimated that the private equity, by most folks in private equity, that the sports market is growing probably 5 to 8% a year, which, is well north of
GDP.
Very
robust growth rate.
Yeah, solid growth. I think driven by a lot of factors. I think if I put my pop psychologist hat on, humans are always kind of interested in shared live experiences. Mm. So it's always fun to go to a game with a friend or family member or talk about that game around the water cooler the next day. So driving part of the growth there. There are really good stable and recurring revenue streams as well, especially in the major sports leagues where the majority of revenue is actually derived from these long multi-year contractual media rights deals. And those continue to increase in value, I think in part because sports is one area that you can reach a wide audience, especially in today's market where there's cord cutting, short attention spans. And these media deals are quite profitable to leagues and teams that improves the margin profile of a lot of the franchises. And of course, private equity is attracted to that aspect. And then lastly, the supply and demand phenomenon, I think, is really favorable, especially in sports leagues. This is a closed ecosystem. There are only a certain number of franchises that exist. So you create that scarcity value that I think is really valuable. Some people think about it similar ways to, let's say, a gold or a Bitcoin, a store of value especially in an inflationary environment, I think is appealing.
Yeah, it's not a space that I knew very well, but in researching this, it kind of struck me as similar to something like infrastructure in a way, that it's quite a robust category, very stable income streams. And then particularly in the United States, you've got a number of structural factors that sort of level the playing field in terms of players and valuations. You've got the draft that the teams do. You've got revenue sharing.
Right. And so salary caps.
Yes, indeed. So it's made it a very sort of stable area and one that's obviously stable, but also growing because you've got international sports coming into the mix and you've got international audiences starting to watch U.S. sports. My brother, a couple of months ago, went to see, I think it was the Steelers playing in Dublin in Ireland.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, so they're branching out. So, yeah, it's been fascinating to see that and then private equity getting involved in the mix. And so in terms of valuations, and we might get into this maybe more specifically later, but we've seen some really eye-popping sums. What's driving this? How do you value a sports team, or what's contributing to the growth and valuations of these teams over time?
Yeah, no, it's an excellent question because obviously context dependent depends on the league or the team. But if you kind of zoom out, some of the most reliable stats that I've seen, at least one really caught my eye that, over the past 6.5 years or so, so Q1 of 2019 till present, the North American major sports franchises have added about $270 billion in total value. And that's about a 14% compound annual growth rate, which certainly is strong. But, as a point of reference, it's about similar to what the S&P 500 has generated over a similar time frame, right? So, however, it's very true that, a typical pro sports team is going to trade for a much higher multiple of revenue or profit than you might see in a typical S&P 500 team, even in a more elevated, market environment like we've seen lately. And I think there are a few reasons to think that those premium valuations are actually merited. We talked a little bit about some of the favorable aspects here, the scarcity value, the positive fundamentals. I also think there's an intangible but truly valuable component of brand equity here for these franchises that, certainly hard to quantify, but is an important factor. It's really difficult to replicate, what they have and what they're able to monetize in different ways over time.
Yeah, yeah. The brand is something that struck me coming to the U.S., where I've seen sports teams that have a particular city's name, but they've relocated to another city, but they keep the original brand name. So clearly brand has value in this market.
Absolutely.
And can you touch on where all this money within private equity is going to? It's not just the teams and the franchises. What other areas are getting interest?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you asked that, because even within the teams itself, so you may think about, this is just billionaire owners selling a portion and cashing out, and certainly that's part of the story here. But there's more to it. I think there's also an element of private equity investment that's going to fuel growth and infrastructure, so to speak, in these teams. For example, stadiums and these mixed use commercial developments that we're seeing, they're expensive, and private equity can, I think, play an important role and also reduce, the reliance on publicly funded subsidies that are somewhat controversial and have ROIs that aren't necessarily clear, to some estimates. I mean, there was a great piece last summer that J.P. Morgan's own Michael Cimbalist put out, a special edition of his Eye on the Market, that talked about a number of different points, one of which was, the cost and value of these stadium projects are material relative to the total value of the franchise. So if private equity can take a role in helping to fund that, I think that's a positive. A couple of examples. Recently, we've seen with the Buffalo Bills, they're opening a new stadium. It's a $2.1 billion project scheduled for next year in Orchard Park. And they took a private equity investment for a minority stake last year that's going to fund a portion of that.
Yeah, that was a great piece. And it kind of opened my eye to, I would not think of professional sports teams as being cash poor particularly.
Right.
But when you think about the stadiums and the number of stadiums that are actually reaching their kind of 30-year lifetime, needing reinvestment and needing expansion, and then a lot of opportunity in there. I came to the U.S. first. I lived in Atlanta, and the Braves Stadium has a huge mixed-use development around it that's been extremely successful, and I think we're seeing that being replicated.
Trying to make sense of investing in alternatives? Our Guide to Alternatives is designed to simplify the complex world of alternative investments and to help you make more informed decisions. For more information on the guide, visit our website at jpmorgan.com/GTA.
In terms of the major leagues within the United States, the likes of the NFL, the NBA, can you talk a little bit about their entrance or maybe growing acceptance of private equity within those leagues. It's quite a recent phenomenon.
No, it absolutely is. I think even for some of the early adopters, so to speak, it's only been really within the past 5 or 6 years that we've seen this take off. And for some of the ones that are a bit more cautious, like the NFL, it was just last year where they allowed private equity investment directly into teams. And they did so with a lot of restrictions. I think only 10% is the maximum amount that private equity can own of a specific team. Each of the private equity firms, and there are only a few that have been pre-approved to make those investments, have to hold those investments for at least 6 years. And they can only have a certain number of team investments across their portfolios. In other leagues, such as the NBA, which has also been a pretty popular one for private equity, each individual firm can own up to 20% of a team, and then total private equity investment could be up to 30%. And that threshold is pretty similar for Major League Baseball and also the NHL. I think those percentages actually have a chance to grow over time, as we're talking about just the cost of acquiring these teams as the valuation has gone up, and also to fund growth initiatives has gotten to the point where it's difficult even for the wealthiest of individuals or groups of individuals. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't surprise me if over time that private equity contributed a greater amount or other forms of investment came in. Although I still think, at least for the foreseeable future, you're unlikely to see them being allowed to have controlling stakes in the big four major sports leagues. I think they'll still be minority passive investments.
Which is interesting when you think about sort of the business model of private equity. It often is driven by having controlling stakes, adding value, having influence, whereas a lot of these firms probably don't have a lot of influence when they have only 10%, 20% stakes. Yeah. In the teams.
I'm glad you brought that up, because it's actually a very much of a contrast to the typical private equity model. It's one of the risks, I think, that's a little bit underrated in this space, because, you know, with regard to governance, controls, and also liquidity, you really don't control your own destiny as much as a private equity investor here. For example, some of these owners or ownership groups, may not be the best operators. They may have different objectives beyond just maximizing shareholder value. And then, you may not be able to generate liquidity at the exact time you want it. I mentioned the six-year NFL restriction. There are certainly approvals that have to go through any sort of transfer of interest. Having said that, there's so much investor appetite for this space. And I think if you understand the risks going in regarding governance and liquidity, there's still pretty attractive returns that can be generated.
Yeah, as long as those risks are understood, explained, absolutely, communicated, and so on. But it's more of a passive investment than an active kind.
Definitely.
Of, which would be the typical private equity investment.
Yeah, that's right. Now, having said that, they're outside of leagues. Again, pro sports is fascinating. It garners the headlines, but there's so much more to investing in sports. Mm. There are a lot of operating companies that participate in this broader ecosystem. They're ones, for example, we've got a portfolio company that helps to own and operate golf courses and other sports venues just for recreational players across the U.S. It's a typical private equity model, operating company, control stake, looking to grow through organically and through acquisitions. So it's a big market, not just with this pro sports teams, even though that's obviously where there's been a lot of interest and activity of late.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, of course, you draw the circle around the teams. You've got the service providers, you've got the agencies, you've got the real estate developments and everything around it. It's just a massive category.
For sure.
And looking at some of the other teams, of course, the major leagues are starting to get in there. Are there other sports or college sports that you could see on the horizon having private equity involvement at some point?
Yeah, absolutely. So, soccer or football, perhaps, as you're more comfortable talking about, is one that's been popular in Europe and the U.S.
I think say soccer in Ireland, actually.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. More aligned with the Americans
that.
In that sense.
Apologies. Formula One was actually an early case study that I found interesting in doing a little research for the podcast. There was a private equity firm who owned the actual Formula One league, so to speak, and did quite well when they sold it. There of course are a number of private equity firms that are investors in some of the teams. We talked about golf a little bit. I think youth sports is an interesting one. It's got seemingly inelastic demand from parents who think, hey, my little Susie is going to be the next Caitlin Clark. So they certainly want to continue to back that. One of my favorites to play Is also the fastest growing sport in North America, pickleball.
Really?
Yeah, so you're seeing some investment from private equity firms, both in teams and also in facilities, you know, taking a lot of the retail space that's been underutilized and converting it into indoor pickleball or mixed use with restaurants. So a lot of activity in multiple sports beyond just the big four that we talked about so far.
Okay, well, very quickly growing category. And I've seen some of that. Car parks being converted to pickleball courts.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Tyler, this is a more recent phenomenon, but what about private equity coming into college sports?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. You know, my Gen Z kids would probably call private equity's relationship with college athletics a situationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's complicated, in other words. There's so many dynamics. There's so many constituents involved. We could probably have a whole podcast just dedicated to talking about that. You think about athletes being able to earn compensation, I think rightfully so, for use of their name, image, and likeness. So that's a major new development. In addition to NIL, you're seeing a lot of conference realignment. So a lot of these college athletic conferences are really in an arms race to attract and retain the best teams. In fact, there was some reports even as recently as last weekend about one of the major conferences setting up a new entity to house its media and sponsorship rights and then selling a portion of that entity to investors, not necessarily a private equity firm apparently, but it could open up a whole new category in college athletics.
Yeah, that could be huge. Let's pivot maybe to some of the risks within this space that investors should be aware of. What are the kind of risks that come to mind?
Yeah, and we talked about some of them with regard to governance, illiquidity, valuations. Again, I think a lot of the factors here have been well covered. One that I don't think we've addressed that I think is important as well not to lose sight of is the fan perspective. Some people worry that with private equity investors coming into the space, that could have a negative impact on the fan experience. Let's say they think, okay, we're just going to get increased ticket prices and cost cutting, so game day experience will be inferior. Maybe they won't be willing to go into the luxury tax, so the players might not be able to retain or attract the best ones, so the competitive level could decline. And certainly valid concerns, although I do think, having worked with private equity firms for over 20 years now, they generally do a good job of listening to the voice of the customer. And the fans really are the customers here, yeah. Right? They're fueling the growth of this industry. The word fanatic, fan comes from fanatic for a reason, right? Like, it's also one of the reasons why I think sports are continuing to be a resilient market, right? You're not going to convince me, even if we're in a recession, to cut off my subscription to NBA League Pass so I can see my Thunder play or pass up a chance when they come to the Garden. To go catch a game. So I think the interests of private equity investors generally are aligned with the fans. They want to put the best product on the field or the court that they can, and they're going to make the necessary investments within reason to do that.
Yeah. And today they're not controlling stakes, they're minorities, so there's sort of a chance to prove how do they perform as investors, how do they get along with fans and engage with the companies and teams and so on.
Yeah, well said.
One risk we should touch on as well is valuations. We've
Absolutely.
Just seen these massive growth in valuations of franchises and companies themselves. What are your views on valuations in sports today?
Yeah, some of the stats that I mentioned earlier are really impressive, right? You've seen that 14% CAGR over the past 6.5 years in valuations, and that's just in aggregate, right? So some of the sports, you've seen a much steeper ramp, the NBA in particular, NFL. You don't have as many data points, but these are certainly frothy numbers if you think about it on a relative basis to trailing financial results. I think there's some factors that mitigate that, not to completely eliminate the risk, of course, but we talked about media rights deals, continued growth there. That's very high margin dollars.
It's huge in an era of cost cutting. One of the stats I picked up in the report that was written by Michael Semblist was, I think 90 of the major broadcasts that were in a given year, TV broadcasts, I think 93 of them were sports broadcasts.
Incredible.
And you had to go down to kind of into the 10s and 20s to see the State of the Union address and to see the Academy Awards and the other major broadcasts. But sports just absolutely dominates TV rights.
Yeah, one of the few areas where you can get so much attention in real time. And obviously advertisers and streaming content providers love that. I think there's going to be continued ways to monetize brands, to expand both number of franchises and expand growth. You mentioned internationally and some of the major sports here in the U.S. So in addition to the brand value and the scarcity value that I mentioned being difficult to quantify, but certainly palpable, I think there are reasons to think that these valuations still are at least within reason, but that time will certainly tell.
Tyler, thank you very much. This has been a fantastic discussion, really fascinating subject. We'll be getting a lot of questions on. So thank you for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me, Aaron.
That was Tyler Giroux, portfolio manager within the private equity group at JP Morgan Asset Management. To all our viewers and listeners, thank you very much for listening to the Alternative Realities podcast. You can download our recently released third quarter 2025 guide to alternatives on the JP Morgan Asset Management website at jpmorgan.com/GTA. And if you've not already done so, please subscribe to Alternative Realities on your favorite podcasting platform.
This material is for information purposes only. The views, opinions, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions are those of the speaker and may differ from those expressed by JP Morgan Asset Management or by other areas of JP Morgan Chase & Company. Any companies referenced are shown for illustrative purposes only and are not intended as a recommendation. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors. This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. JP Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of JP Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.